You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Can only come from you. Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
Are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope you are well today. Hope you had a great weekend. I hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it was not, and it had to get done, you know it must be done. I know you got it done. Because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And that's why we have love and respect and admiration for you. And confidence in you. And you did it safely. Because that Delta virus, that Delta variant is out there rolling. And so, once again, I don't advocate anything. I advocate us being safe, you know. But if you feel whatever you feel you have to do, do it. Do it. And ain't no, you know, I have my contentions. But in your heart, in your mind, if you feel that's what you must do, do it. You know, because one reality is, people are dying. I've known people who have died, you know, from previous recent so-called pandemics. I didn't know anybody who died. I know over 10 people who have died personally, maybe more. So take care of yourself out there. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop-down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, on Mondays, from 6 to 8, all times they're going to give always are Eastern times until otherwise noted. These are Eastern times. From 6 to 8 p.m. this evening, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Jihad Ahmed. And then from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. Black Reality Think Tank. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9. The Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, that's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening. And then on Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers, from 4 to 6. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Council. The Sankofa Council, from 7 to 9. And then on Sunday, once again, at 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, go online to WeBuyBlack.com. Those products are produced by us. If you buy a certain amount of products, your delivery is free. Check out WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tayemba is going back to the motherland soon. His next trip is November. November 18th through the 29th of this year to Tanzania. That's right, brothers. I said Tanzania. I didn't say Tanzania. I said Tanzania. That's how they pronounce it. You got to give respect. If that's how they pronounce it, then that's what you do. You know? Tanzania. The next trip is December 24th through January 5th of 2022 to Ghana. Then in April of next year, April 1st to April 11th, 2022, to Senegal and Gambia. And then May 24th to June 5th, once again to Ghana. All trips still at this present time at $3,700 per person. Brothers and sisters, go to africa40african.org. Make your down payment, pay on it as you can, and you too can experience a trip of a lifetime. Everything you need to make that happen is on the website. The documentations, the visas, all the information that is necessary, the shots and so forth where you get them. Everything is right there for you for Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Also, too, if you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. If you want to see pictures, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to give my good brother a call, give him a call at 404-913-9429. That's 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Africa for the Africans. Brother Rinoco is gearing up. He's leaving for Kemet this Saturday, July 31st to August 13th. Hope by Wednesday I'll announce when we'll be having conversation with Brother Rinoco from Kemet as he has his tour and lecture series in Kemet from the 31st to August 13th. From the 31st to August 13th. A great schedule. I mean, his trip is $4,200. $4,200 per person. He has great pictures, updated itinerary. You know, you see, leaving out of New York, they show cruising down the Nile in Cairo. Actually, what usually happens, I guess, is that you take a plane to Aswan, and then because the river flows from south to north, and then you flow down river, you flow north, you know, and it's just beautiful. Of course, there is Hari Market, what the Greeks call the Sphinx, you know, and just a great trip. And then you'll see many of the things. You're going to go to, you visit Saqqara with the step pyramid of Saqqara with Imhotep, built for the Pharaoh Zoser, the first large stone buildings. Dashur, you go to Memphis, you know. Of course, the museum opened up the new museum. I'm quite sure that's exciting. I know Brother Rinoco is excited about that, the brand new museum. If you go to visit some tombs, going to go to Dendera, Abydos, you know. And then, of course, it's Ipeti Sut in Southern Pet. It's not Luxor. That's an Arab word. In fact, that's where you get the word luxury because it was so dynamic. And, of course, Karnak. And they'll be visiting there. You're going to go to Queen Hatshepsut's. You're going to go to Queen Hatshepsut's temple in the Valley of the Kings and Queens. And, of course, you visit Abu Simbel. Thursday, you'll visit Abu. You know, if you go to France and you don't go to the Eiffel Tower, you don't go to the Champs-Élysées and all of those kinds, then you ain't really been there. It's just the same thing. There are certain places, if you go to Kemet, that you must go to. And, of course, when you visit Abu Simbel, you can also visit a Nubian village. You know, then you fly. See, they're going to sail, down based upon this itinerary. And then you're going to fly back to Cairo. So you board in Cairo and sail down river. That's cool. Then, of course, you depart and come back. Yep, it's $4,200. Yep. Great. That's going to be great for brothers and sisters. I'll be announcing that for the rest of the week going to Kemet. Beautiful. Brother Rinoco. So I hope to talk with him and hope to be announcing the date and, of course, when we'll be talking with Brother Rinoco from Kemet. That's going to be outstanding. Habeshah. HabeshahIncorporated.org. Habeshah Incorporated. These brothers and sisters are doing the work. They deserve to be supported. That's HabeshahIncorporated.org. Habeshah stands for helping establish schools at home and abroad. It's a Pan-African organization that cultivates leadership in youth families and through practical experiences in cultural education, sustainable agriculture, entrepreneurship, and holistic health and technology. The Kashi project that they have in Ghana, the other projects that they have, of course, Habeshah Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. And, of course, you go online to HabeshahIncorporated.org, and you'll see what is being done. You'll see what's happening with the Kashi Project in Ghana and so forth. HabeshahIncorporated.org. The Ledge Program. The Ledge Group. Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The Ledge Group. They deal in the four areas of human existence that are vital to human existence. Food, water, shelter and clothing, food, water, clothing and shelter, whichever way you want to put it, they're all equally as important. Food, water, clothing and shelter. They have 12 projects going on in six countries with over 170 employed and over 260 members. Become a part of the Ledge Group. In fact, if you do, you will be eligible to purchase an acre of land in Tanzania. Imagine if you can get 4 acres of land. $1,000, just $1,000, which you could do in Tanzania. I'm still holding out, hoping that I can still make that trip the end of the year to Tanzania. Bibi Tumi. ABIBITUMI.com. BBTUMI.com. They had some good things happening this past weekend. They had the Kwame Ture Memorial Lecture Series. Then, of course, they had Why Every African Person Should Care About What Happens in Haiti. You know, I don't see any future right now, future programs coming up. But, brothers and sisters, go to BBTUMI.com. Make it a favorite. Go there often. Check out what's happening. We appreciate that. BBTUMI.com. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar in the West End, across the street from the Shrine, across the street from the Soul Vegetarian, and up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Oh, the Shrine of the Black Madonna is open. They had a program this past weekend. Not attendance wasn't unfortunately good, but I stayed there for a while. I remember times before it had been a lot better. But they're collaborating with the UNIA, that's the Universal Negro Improvement Association, and ACL, African Community Leagues, Division 421 here in Atlanta. They're collaborating for Saturday, August 14th, Marcus Garvey Commemoration Festival from 12 to 6. There'll be drummers, dancers, singers, healthcare, vendors, markets, you name it, you know. Call because vending spots are going fast at 404-254-5122. 404-254-5122. That's going to be from 12 noon to 6 p.m. August 14th to commemorate the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey's birthday at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Once again, the shrine is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. Us Lifting Us to Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa. Us Lifting Us. every Thursday night. Join their broadcast from 9 to 10 Eastern every Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. But if you want to call to listen, you can do that. If you want to call to give questions, comments, or concerns, you can do that as well at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. That's us lifting us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Us lifting us. Okay. I'm going along pretty good, ain't I? I'm doing all right. What'd you say? Or what? I'm all right? Okay. What's I got up next? Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. That's right, Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Brothers and sisters, give our good sister Shelly Amundsen a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located in the International Discount Mall in Forest Park, Georgia. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Rilia, and the job that she's doing in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti is just monumental and deserves to be supported. Please, brothers and sisters, go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org, and you'll see the beautiful children in their school outfits because they deal with education, healthcare, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. You'll see what they're growing. You see the chickens and so forth, and, you know, they, you know, just doing a great job. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Akaban Institute. Akaban Institute. Baba Baruti and Mama Yah, once again, as always, they're on the case. I love them. Good people. Brothers and sisters, support them. I think that the educational component is growing because of the virtual, the Zooms and so forth. So, you know, I talked to them. They even have some students in Africa who make that sacrifice later that day to be on the call or on the Zoom with them and so forth. That's great. In fact, a few other people who are listeners have contacted them because Mama Inia has contacted me. But brothers and sisters, if you are old school like me and you want to send a check, make it out to Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But if you want to use Cash App or PayPal, please do so and make your constant contributions. At Cash App, you'll use the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. If you want books from Baba Baruti, AkabinHouse.com. Go to AkabinHouse.com. He has a fine selection of books. He is prolific writer. Baba Mwalimu Baruti. In fact, we read every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on this program, the Inye Sesim. Oh, first let me talk about some things that he has upcoming before I go to the Inye Sesim. Saturday, next week, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, August 7th, 12 noon to 2 p.m., Chess or Checkers, A Question of Power. Chess or Checkers, A Question of Power. And that is going to be, once again, a Zoom conference. And make your donations, $10 for warriors and $5 for warriors in training via PayPal at yahbaruti at yahoo.com or Cash App at $ Yah M. Baruti. Okay. Include the name of the information, Chess or Checkers, then your name, and of course your email address so you can receive the link for August 7th from 12 noon
to 2 p.m. Mama Inyashi has the sister circle also that day. Mama Inya has a sister circle that day. And that's choosing to heal. Choosing to heal. And once again, the same procedure. Put the information in. And it's $10 for adults and $5 for teens, including information, quarterly sister circle, your name, and your email address so you can see, you can get the link. And the time for her presentation is from 4 to 6, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on the same day, August 7th. So the sister circle, or the sister circle, their quarterly, and the men's quarterly, same day, August 7th. August 7th. Also, too, Centered, Building an African Realities, a five-week course taught by Brother Baruti every Wednesday at 7:30 to 9 p.m. And it begins August 11th through the 8th. August 11th through the 8th. You can contact them. But the same thing. And what is the cost on that? $10 per class or $45 for the entire course. $45, brothers and sisters, for the entire course. And once again, the pertinent information sent to either Cash App or PayPal. And that center course, your name, and then the email address where you want the link to send to be sent to. And of course, AkabinHouse.com, with the multiple number of books that Baba Baruti has authored and how profound they are. He also has a commercial for PanaFest that's going to be taking place. Oh, it's taking place now, today, and in Africa, in Ghana, PanaFest. Taking place in Accra and in Elmina, in Ghana. And there's a great, beautiful picture of many of the participants. Sister Ikena, the fiery sister that I love, love her spirit. Still, I'm going to eventually get her on the program. I'm going to try. And, of course, our good brother in Africa, Obadale Cambon. Obadale Cambon and his beautiful family. Many others that I recognize. So, all right. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought, the Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. July 25th. The healing power of a person lies within the person, not within the doctor or a pill or a knife. The healing power of a community lies within the community, not within a ballot box or an executive order or referendum, Sister Quarantine. In times of chaos, individually and collectively, we do have a choice. We can come out of any harmful situation remaining under the same disempowered conditions that we entered in, with the same endless frustrations, complaints, and disillusioned dreams. Or we can come out of it in a better position to make empowering decisions which will remove the tangle of questions about whether we are going, about where we are going and how we're going to get there. Let us never forget again frivolously wasting time waiting to return to what has never worked for us, which is, of course, the opposite, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. In the meantime, as we use this time to process, plan, and improve the quality of the organization and vision of ourselves as community and nation, we must be clear on exactly what we are trying to build. We must make the time to concisely reflect, consciously reflect on who our ancestors are and what they would do to center our movement. Based on what has worked and what has not, on who we are in our hearts of hearts and what violates that. We must honestly ask ourselves what should lie at the center of our work and what must be discarded in order for us to uncompromisingly do it. For without being centered, we cannot build whole, self-sustaining, uncontaminated, viable African realities. Affirm, I heal from within a community and help others likewise. I heal from within a community and help others to do likewise. July 26. No matter what accomplishments you make, somebody helps you. The tennis great Althea Gibson. On the front line, an ingrate is a person who erroneously claims warrior status but is unqualified to fulfill this role. Even though they can often cite our masters, teachers, and others from whom they learn who are we, they have not internalized the selfless character and vision of which these ancestral and living sages speak. Because being ungrateful requires having received something beneficial that the giver did not have to offer. Such individuals were taught, nurtured, and loved by those already on the front line. However, in confusing the sharing inherent in African communalism with Yorugu's competitive thievery, they act as if these embarking gifts were owed to them. Often they lie by omission when uttering our truths. Even worse, and without giving credit where it is due, or if so, still being unappreciative for the sacrifices others have made to their personal development, they believe it is their right and in their power to speak for those who taught them as if they have the same experiences, knowledge, and wisdom. Much like Yorugu, stole the material, but discarded its spirit because of their inability to comprehend it, these ingrates are only equipped to criticize those who actually are doing the necessary work. Affirm, I recognize and I'm grateful for the communal input to my accomplishments. Affirm, I recognize and I am grateful for the communal input to my accomplishments. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a great weekend this past weekend. Also, too, I met with the brothers and with the young men who we are Jagnas to and who are building with us a warriorhood, a brotherhood of young men that we desperately need young men to be models, young men who will take a step forward without hesitation, without fear, and do what is right for our people to make those kind of sacrifices. It is an honor to work with the elders, the other brothers, as we forge a relationship, because many of them I've seen on the Zoom conferences, but we had a chance to meet in person, and there's nothing like the opportunity to meet in person. So, in fact, when I leave here, I'm going that way to continue to meet with them. So, that's beautiful. And, of course, whatever we come together to do to impact these young brothers, I know that it will be a benefit to our community, to our people, you know, because that's what we must do. That's what we must do. I'm going to talk today about how North Africa became white. As you know, I talk a lot about the continent because The continent is our salvation. It is on the continent that we as Africans can freely, unashamedly, without hindrance, be who we are. We don't have to ask nobody for permission. We don't have to check and see if it's okay, especially once we get everybody out of there. And the reason why I'm talking about North Africa, because they actually be out too. The continent is ours. Now, I know there are some people talking, well, we were the first people everywhere. But please, brothers and sisters, I'm saying I'm making a claim for the continent. I ain't making a claim for the planet. I'm making a claim for the continent. And for us to secure that, and for us to defend that, and for us to grow our families, our communities, our nation, that we will be an example and a model for the rest of the world in terms of how we operate, in terms of what we do and how we do it. This is vitally important, brothers and sisters, vitally important. But of course, you know, in the northern part of Africa, when Islam came on the scene, spreading across North Africa, coming from the so-called Middle East, Egypt, Libya, Algeria, Morocco, Mauritania, whatever, Tunis, Tunisia, whatever, they became Caucasian. Well, it wasn't the first time that invaders have invaded and attempted to conquer or take North Africa, particularly Kemet. And it's the one when Normer, who started the first dynasty, united the upper and lower Kemet. There's Normer's palette. On that one side, you see him having somebody upset, with the, you know, grabbing at the head, and he's about to smite them. He's about to hit them with the bop gun. He's smiting the enemies, you know. So it's not the first time. And, of course, eventually Kemet, through a number of situations, became lighter and whiter over a period of time. And of course, the people who are there today, now I know they can claim, and rightfully so, in terms of their existence there, they have been, you know, they have been in Kemet a long time. But they are not the dynasties. They're not of the dynastic periods. They're after the dynastic periods. They're the Ptolemies. Then they're the Coptics. The Coptics. And then, of course, they're the Arabs. You know. But this is how they became white. This is why it's important that we understand this. Black people ignorant that their ancestors, who adjusted to the material conditions of the Nile Valley, are the oldest guides of humankind on the way to civilization. That's right. That's Sheikh Anta Jop. We will talk about Jop in the near future, along with Dr. Thelophilio Benga, because it is Jop and Benga who argued persuasively in 74 of why what we're talking about here holds weight. North Africa is white. I don't know how many times I've heard this statement from North Africans determined to deny any contributions of black people to the civilizations of Egypt. And this is I may be pronouncing it wrong, Maghreb. And it's also the Iberian Peninsula, so I can use that and exchange the Iberian Peninsula. And of course, the Iberian Peninsula is Spain and Portugal. Despite the quantity of evidence, beforehand, the present North Africa is not entirely white, and we think so, especially in Libya and the present North Africa, and the south of Algeria, where strong African features have survived. But we will get to know the whiteness of North Africa is relatively recent. We will try to give some elements of answers concerning the Iberian Peninsula and Libya especially. They show a picture of a before and after in Kemet. They show Amenhotep III. And his features. Amenhotep III, the father, of course, of Akhenaten and the grandfather of Tutankhamun. It's in the British Museum. He embodies the absolute climax of African North Africa or Black North Africa. And, of course, on the right is a Berber of the Iberian Peninsula. Of course, they were varied. First of all, it's important to say that the natural features of the whole of Africa is black. The natural features of the whole of Africa is black. All Caucasians of this world came from Eurasia, from Europe and Asia, Eurasia. It is under the European polar temperature that the blacks, first human being, became white. Through the adjustments to the icy climate. This point was extensively explained. I should go there, to see exactly how they explained it, because I've tried to do it many times on this program, talking about how we, through a series of migrations over thousands of years, left out of Africa, Central East Africa, because that's the beginning point that people agree that's the oldest fossil remains of humanity, and migrate. And then, of course, going into Europe, being cut off by the Ice Age, we mutated, we changed a variant, another human variant. And we have had to adjust and adapt, because if you don't, you die. So no longer was our bodies tall and slender with sable skin, or very melanated skin to protect our bodies from the ultraviolet rays of the sun and not get skin cancer and so forth. No longer did our bodies need that. Our bodies became stocky and fat to help insulate us from that cold. Our hair, which was kinky and close curled, became straight and stringy, particularly to go down the back of our necks to protect the blood pumping from our heart to get to our brain so we can function. Blood has to go from the heart to the brain and then through all the other parts of your body to function. Our nose became thin to warm the cold air before it got into our lungs. Our lips became thin to hold in whatever heat that we could hold. In fact, Caucasians look more like a monkey than we do. But of course, they're always associating that. Especially, I don't know if you checked out the soccer. It doesn't make any difference if you're in Europe and soccer is big, globally, particularly in Europe, and those three brothers missed those penalty kicks for England for the world championship, the European championship, and they were castigated, they were ridiculed, they were, oh man. It is from this European cradle that the white human being spread in the whole of the world. As a consequence, every white who lives in Africa has a close or far ancestry outside of Africa. In fact, if there are whites in Africa, it is not indigenous to Africa. If there's whites in Africa, there's Caucasian, they are outside, they come from outside of Africa. The natural feature of Africa is strictly black. Once again, I refer to the documentary Great Pyramid K, 2019. Great Pyramid K, 2019 on YouTube. That's right. It is on YouTube. So you don't have to, if you got a computer, I'm quite sure you have YouTube. All you got to do is go to YouTube, put in the search, Great Pyramid K, 2019, it'll come up. Yes, I know it is over 3.5 hours long, but it is well worth the viewing. I've seen it many times. I'm going to see it many times more. Because not only did it tell you how the pyramids were built, and that is extraordinary, but it also tells you who built them and who brought the foundations of mathematics. It is dynamic. It is dynamic. We are going to discover when and how the white element entered Africa and became dominating and domineering in North Africa. The whitening of Egypt. It is more important to go over the black African nature of the European civilization because it has been sufficiently proven. It, once again, that documentary will unequivocally, undeniably prove the ancient Kemetic people, the dynastic period. I ain't talking about the decline. I ain't talking about later on. I ain't talking about the Ptolemies. The dynastic period. Thousands of, 5,000 years ago, maybe 6,000 years ago, up until the time that they came in. At the definite fall of Kemet and its besiegement by the Greeks, Aristotle kept on telling about Egyptians that they were exclusively black. That's Aristotle. That's not Socrates. That's not Plato. That's one of the last of the Greek philosophers, the thieves, and he was big one. He was a big one. Aristotle was a big one. But he said they were black. But there was a white element in Egypt, obviously in small number, and in the very beginning of the Egyptian history. This is testified by the examination of Norma's palette. The first pharaoh of United Kemet, when he sacrificed apparently white foreigners in 3330 BCE, 3,300 years before Christ. Like I said, you look at Norma's palette, you see him smiting his enemies. The white element came back to Kemet permanently, only in the form of a war prisoner, a servant around 1300 under the reign of Mentep Ptah. Egypt succumbed to the white Assyrians, the Persians, which are Iranians, the Greeks, and eventually the Romans. These were the successions of invaders. The Hyksos were the Assyrians, the Hyksos, on the first major invasions until they were expelled. And then the Persians were really dogmatic. In fact, based upon what I've read, the brothers and sisters were happy that these folks came in to get these Persians. I mean, the Greeks came in to get these Persians off their ass. And then, of course, then the Romans. These invasions made blacks flee toward other regions of Africa. Those who remained were crossbred. These are the Coptics. The Coptics. These were the ones that were still holding on when the Romans became the leaders in Kemet. They were still holding on to African traditions. And so one could argue, if you saw that and you had no visual or no understanding of what it was like prior, then you would make an assumption that Kemet or Egypt was Caucasian. Or light skin or mulatto. But once again, that documentary tells you unequivocally, undeniably, in terms of building Kemet, the pharaonic dynasties, the buildings of temples and tombs and the Valley of the Kings and Queens, all those things were black Africans. Finally, the country is besieged by Arabs in 639. than 3 centuries of the Ottoman Turks' domination completed the whitening of Kemet, the whitening of Egypt, the Ottoman Turks. 639, Islam just spreads straight across. Libya and Iberian Peninsula whitening in Libya. It was in the time of the Pharaoh, Seti the First. And that's when you talk about Seti and you talk about Ramesses the Second, you're talking about some very strong leaders in the, this is the 18th dynasty. This is the time supposedly of Moses, the time that supposedly the Hebrews were in captivity. But we all now know that no slaves built none of that, and that they were not enslaved. They were not enslaved. The Exodus is not true. It didn't happen. But it was around the time of the Pharaoh Seti, around 1300 BC, that some Caucasian or white people were visibly described in Libya under the Temenu. Since when had they been there? Is there any relationship between them and the sacrificed white people by Narmer? We cannot tell. However, under the reign of Ramesses the Third, not Ramesses the Second, Ramesses the Second is Ramesses the Great. That's who was a man. He was an egomaniac in terms of his building on a colossal scale. That's his image at Abu Simbel, along with his wife Nefertari. We cannot tell. Moreover, under the reign of Ramesses III, Ramesses III has an interesting relief in his temple in Kemet. It shows four men. They show the Indo-Europeans, the Semitic people, and they show two dark-skinned people, one Kemet and the other one Nubian. The Kemet and Nubian like cousins. The same image, the same people, the same darkness. The Persians or the Semitic people. And of course, the Indo-European people who are the white folks. We cannot tell. Moreover, the reign of Ramesses III around 1200, 100 years later, a large people of white invaders were pushed back from Egypt to Libya. And they emphasized the white contribution. According to Dr. Sheikh Anche Djop, before that, also known as the Tenias, also known as Libas, were a black people living in Libya, and they are probably the ancestors of the present-day Libas in Senegal. Therefore, we can maintain that in the second half of antiquity, there were blacks and whites in Libya. We do have a clear description about the Iberian Peninsula before the testimonies of Greeks and Romans. The African Carthaginians. We already explained here that black race of Carthaginians, a people who had ruled this area from 814 to 17 to 147 BC. So about 600, 700 years. This is based on the skeletal analysis carried out by European anthropologists. The French anthropologist Gazelle, director of Algiers Museum, concluded that the analysis of the skeletons found in Carthage proves that there is no racial or ethnic unity. The Semitic type, white Berbers or Arabs, characterized by an oval face, an angle and thin nose, was not found in Carthage. Let me repeat. The Semitic type, white, this is the Caucasians saying this, for some reason that many of our people believe that if Caucasians are saying it, somehow it holds more weight. that the French anthropologist Gazelle, he said, the Semitic type, the white Berber or Arab, characterized by an oval face, an angled and thin nose, was not found in Carthage. On the other hand, the type with more structured out body than the legs is common to the skeletons found in Lebanon and Tyre. And this corresponds with the Phoenicians, who were also black. The majority of the Carthaginian population was black African. Phoenicians' Carthaginian ancestors were also black if we consider the same analysis of the skeletons of their capital city, Tyre, in Lebanon, and their port of Syracuse in Italy. That being said, there have been a close contact between Phoenicians and whites from Asia, hence the fact that Phoenicians had a Semitic language. Once again, the contact did not modify the racial contents in Carthage's time, if we take this analysis into consideration. Carthage was a black African civilization. Hannibal was black. Hannibal was black. When the Romans took the Iberian Peninsula after their war against Hannibal, the Carthaginian, they found so many blacks in Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco, that they called Moors and named the place Mauritania. The word Moris in Greek and in Latin means black strictly. Mauritania therefore means a black people country. Morocco is possibly derived from the same root word, Moor. In fact, if the word finally means white today, it is because it is a word for the inhabitants of a region which had been preserved despite the fact that those people had changed their appearance. This categorical testimony of the Europeans suggests that blacks were always there in that upper northern area of Africa. Libya, for its part, due to the robbery its nomadic people was indulging in, was named Berberi by the Romans. Also in Libya, Greeks, Romans described the presence of people with scarred and painted faces, wearing braids and practicing totemism, with a clearly matriarchal organization. This is a clear cultural description of black people. That's right, matriarchal, brothers. We all had a matriarchal system. The same period documents describe the presence of a small Ethiopian nation living from Tunis. The same period documents describe the presence of a small Ethiopian nation living from Tripoli in Libya to Tunis. The word Ethiopian derives from the Greek word, which means burnt face, so black. The word was originally applied to the blacks of Sudan. This proves that they were blacks in Libya. The Arabs entered the Berberi and Mauritania. They transformed the word Berberi into Berber to refer to all people of this area in Libya without distinction of color. Therefore, initially the word Berber was referring to mostly black people. Those indigenous people were composing the overwhelming majority of troops who entered Spain in 711 to start the 781 years of Muslim occupation of the Iberian Peninsula. The testimonies of Europeans that period are categorical. The Spanish King Alfonso X, also known as a wise narrator, narrated the invasion. Also known as the wise, narrated the invasion. All the Moorish soldiers were dressed with silk and black wool and had been forcefully acquired. Their black faces were like pitch, and the most handsome of them was like black as a cooking pan. See this picture. I know you probably saw this picture of brothers playing, the Moorish dignitaries playing chess in Spain. Beside them were two maids, a white lady and a black one, and a black musician. It's from the Golden Age of the Moors, from Ivan von Sertima's book on page 29. Here's an excerpt of Roland's Song, a French epic tale about the battle between the Franks and the Africans in North Spain in the 8th century, which tells about the appearance of the invaders. At their head rides the Abyssinian. No worse criminal rides in that company, stained with the marks of his crime and great treason, lacking the faith in God, St. Mary's son. And he is black as melted pitch, Ethiopian, burnt face, a cursed land indeed. The blackamoors from there are his keep. Broad in the nose, they are flat. 50,000 and more company. When Roland sees that unbelievable race, those hordes and hordes blacker than the blackest ink, no shred of white on them except their teeth. There's another picture, I believe that's from another collection. It shows another brother. It was therefore the Europeans who gave us the best description of the first period people of that area, of that era. Historians estimate 3.5 million of blacks in Spain and Portugal at the end of the Muslim occupation. There, and that was in 1492. That's right. You heard that year before, haven't you? Exactly. That's the same year Columbus set sail. The same year that they expelled the Moors and the Sephardic Jews from Spain. 1492. At the end of the Muslim occupation, their current descendants are called Murua, Maurice, Moor, Moren, Morano, Murray, Surfsaw, et cetera. We therefore ask ourselves this question. If the Iberian Peninsula was black until the 8th century, how did it become white? The Arab presence explained partly the phenomenon, but the last two steps of the populating process seemed to solve this enigma. Boy, sometimes it's a little tough. In fact, there's another picture of the Moors, and they have white Europeans as being enslaved to Arabs and Muslims. The 2002 Ukraine Encyclopedia estimates 2 to 2.5 million of the number of deportees from Ukraine, Belarus, and Moscow region. Between the 15th and the 18th century only, knowing that the white slave trade by the Muslims began in the 8th century and involved a large area, one is led to believe that the outcome is much more important than 2.5 million people. This is a slave trade people went to high because it is about the enslavement of white people, of Europeans, Germanic, and Slavic. In fact, hence the word slave, Slavic, slave, by the Muslim Arabs. White men were castrated by European Jews in Verdun in France and deported from Venice. Europeans and Arabs have a kind of tactic agreement to pass this story in silence and make all believe that only black Africans were slaves. All those whites, especially women, were enslaved in the whole of the Muslim world, including the Iberian Peninsula, probably much more than blacks. Therefore, white people crossbred with black Berbers to create those we continue to call Berbers still today. The Ottoman presence will also intensify the whitening phenomenon, the Ottoman Turks. This tends to explain why there are African elements, European and Semitic, Arab, in the Berber languages. We suspect that the Berbers will never accept such a conclusion. No, of course they wouldn't. In summary, if the steps of the Egyptian whitening are known, the Iberian Peninsula and Libya, meanwhile, initially black, would have bleached with the first white Libyans, Arabs, and Turkish people, and especially the white slave trade. Hotep. According to BBC, though, this article British slave Barbary Coast, 1.2 million whites of European were enslaved between 1530 and 1780 in Libya. Yeah. And of course, a lot of this information, the Golden Age of the the Golden Age of the Moors by Dr. Ivan van Sertima, statement by historian David Imhotep, Shiganja Jop, the black race of the Carthaginians, the Golden Age of the Moors again, and other resources. But you can see, and we'll talk more about the Moors when we come back, who they were and their impact. Because a lot of times we just don't know, do we? No, we don't. We don't know. So we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, there'll be more information, and you can join this conversation when we come back from the break at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspective. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Oh, That's all right. Everything's all right.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, tonight, this evening, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Sister Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report every Wednesday from 8 to 9, the Black Farmers Report. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Council, the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Talking about how North Africa became white. You know, what's interesting is how Europeans have done what they've done and continue to do what they do, and yet we as Africans don't take a step back. Look at this madness, what it is, and reject it. Not try to reform it, not try to change it, not try to work with it. Reject it and reject them. It's a damn shame that we don't do it.
because that's what we must do. But yet, we think somehow we can put a referendum together. We can vote. We can. Nothing will change our condition, brothers and sisters. Nothing. Nothing with them involved. Nothing with them involved. I don't want a damn thing from them. But just to get out of the way. Get out of our lives. So this changed, of course, the dynamic. But clearly, based upon what I stated before, it was all African. Libya, Hannibal, Carthaginians, all of them African. The continent of Africa was African, black African, up until the time of Islam. And then, of course, the Africans who embraced Islam, the Moors, who came up into the Iberian Peninsula, into Spain and Portugal, and the influence that they made. Here are 15 things that you didn't know about the Moors of Spain and the Moors conquest. The Spanish occupation of the Moors began in 711 when an African army under the leadership of Tariq Said crossed the Strait of Gibraltar. That's the little area between North Africa and Spain, the Strait of Gibraltar. From Northern Africa, and invaded the Iberian Peninsula. A European scholar sympathetic to the Spanish remembrance of the conquest, he has it this way, because he's sympathetic to the whites. He said, "The reign of their Moors, their horses were as fire, their faces black as pitch. Their eyes shone like burning candles. Their horses were swift as leopards, and their riders fiercer than a wolf in sheepfold at night. The noble Goths, the Germans, rulers of Spain at the time, were broken in an hour, quicker than the tongue can tell. Oh, luckless Spain." The Moors and the Portuguese, global expansion in the golden age of the Moors. That's from Dr. Ivan van Sertima. The Moors, who ruled Spain for 800 years, and they introduced scientific techniques to Europe, such as a device, such as an astral instrument that you can measure the positioning of the stars and the planets. Scientific progress in astronomy, chemistry, physics, mathematics, geography, philosophy nourished and flourished in Moorish Spain. Basil Davidson, a Caucasian historian, some argue has been objective, Basil Davidson, one of the most noted historians, recognized and declared that there were no lands at the time in the 8th century, 700s, more admired by its neighbors or more comfortable to live in than a rich African civilization which took shape in Spain. Number five, at the height, Cordova, the heart of Moorish territory in Spain, was the most modern city in Europe. The streets were well paved with raised sidewalks for pedestrians. During the night, 10 miles of street were well illuminated by lamps. This was hundreds of years before there were paved streets in Paris or a street lamp in London. Cordova had 900 public baths and they were told that a poor Moorish person would go without bread than without soap. The Great Mosque of Cordoba is still one of the most architectural wonders of the world, in spite of the Spanish disfigurements. Its low scarlet and gold roof, supported by 1,000 columns of marble, jasper, was lit by thousands of brass and silver lamps, which burned perfumed oil. Number seven, Education was universal in Moorish Spain, available to all. While in Christian Europe during this time, this is the medieval Dark Ages, 90%, over 90% of the population was illiterate, and even kings could neither read nor write. At the time, Europe only had two universities. The Moors had 17 great universities. These were located in Almería, Cordoba, Granada, Juan, Seville, and Toledo. Number 8. In the 10th and 11th centuries, public libraries in Europe were non-existent, while the Moorish Spain could boast of more than 70, of which one in Cordoba housed 600,000 transcripts. Over 4,000 Arabic words and Arabic-derived phrases have been absorbed into the Spanish language, words beginning with L, A-L, for example, are derived from Arabic. Arabic words such as algebra, alcohol, chemistry, nadir, alkaline, and ciphered into the language. Even words such as checkmate, influenza, typhoid, orange, and cable can be traced back to Arabic origins. Number 10, the most significant Moorish musicians was known as the Blackbirds, who has Zirhad, the Blackbirds, who arrived in Spain in 822. The Moors introduced earliest versions of several instruments, including the lute or el oud, the guitar. And that changed the style. Zebed also changed the style of eating by breaking meals into separate courses, beginning with soup and ending with dessert. Is that right? Is that right? See, a lot of these things you think are straight up European, but their origins are somewhere else. But of course, Europeans don't give credit to anybody. They don't give credit. If they claim they didn't do it and it wasn't done, then somehow it just happened with us. Fell into our laps. The Moors introduced paper to Europe and Arabic numbers, which replaced the clumsy Roman system. The Moors introduced many new crops, including orange, lemon, and peach, apricots, figs, sugarcane, dates, ginger, pomegranate, as well as saffron, sugarcane, cotton, silk, and rice, which remain some of Spain's many products today. The Moorish rulers lived in palaces, while the monarchs of Germany, France, and England dwelt in big barns with no windows and no chimneys, with only a hole in the roof for the smoke to exit. One such Moorish palace literally means the red one, Alhambra in Granada, is one of Spain's architectural masterpieces. Alhambra was the seal of Moorish rulers from the 13th century to the end of the 15th century. Alhambra is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. 14. It was through Africa that the new knowledge of China, India, and Arabic reached Europe. The Moors brought the compass from China into Europe, the compass. Number 15, the Moors ruled and occupied Lisbon and the rest of the country until well into the 12th century. They were finally defeated and driven out by the forces of King Alfonso. The scene of this battle was the Castle of St. George. Castle of St. George. 1492. We taught Europeans twice. They sat at our feet. First, they came into Kemet, and they sat at our feet. The Greeks came there and stayed years. Then they came, went back to Greece, and like Aristotle, excuse me, like Socrates, because he was one of the first ones who came back and explained what he had learned and what he was trying to do. And of course, the Greeks said, hey, you're bringing all these foreign ideas up in here, you know, messing with our children's minds. They rejected it. They rejected him. And they poisoned him, made him drink hemlock. Plato saw what was happening. He stayed in Kemet for many years until finally he emerged with information that was foreign to the land, but it was more accepting at the time. And then, of course, Aristotle, who was an advisor and a philosopher at the time of Alexander the so-called great. And of course, it was at that time that the conquest of Greece over Kemet took place and the end of the dynastic periods and the beginning of the Ptolemies. And they ruled in Kemet for 300 some years. And then the Romans. And of course, the face of Kemet began to change. And I said to you, the Coptic Christians were more light skinned. You know, this process of whitening, even though our DNA is dominant, see, that was the fear that the Caucasians had when they began to go out and take people's stuff in the name of and have intercourse with indigenous people, rape, and seeing that the offspring did not look like them, which Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said caused an innate fear in them of genetic annihilation, which is true. And especially today, because why? They're not producing, they're not reproducing. They are suffering for it has been now quite maybe about two decades. Negative population growth. But we taught them then, and they came back as conquerors, and they put their face, particularly in the latter part of Kemet. And that many people believe that. And of course, the main thing of the European Renaissance and Awakening was European supremacy in all matters. They took what they learned from the Moors. Once again, we taught them again from 711 to 1492, over 700, 800 years. There's a movie, if you want to, it is not that profound. It's I think it's called The Vikings with Richard Widmark and Sidney Poitier. Sidney Poitier plays a Moor who got a perm. He plays a Moor in that movie, and he's the leader. And I haven't seen the movie in a long, long time. The only thing I remember is him being killed. I think a bell or something fell on him. Anyway, but once again, is that in the Europeans' mind, they have to dominate and subdue and crush or eliminate anything that is black. And so even the Moorish conquest, but it cannot be denied. A lot of these things that I say cannot be denied. And it's not just me saying, I'm reading from information that has been substantiated and verified. You want to get in on this conversation or anything else you want to talk about, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You know. The term Moor is an acronym first used by Christian Europeans to designate the Muslim inhabitants of the Iberian Peninsula, Sicily and Malta during the Middle Ages. The Moors initially were the indigenous Berbers. The name was later applied to Arabs and Arabized Iberians, the Moors. And they were black. They were black for 800 years. And so, once again, there is a plethora of evidence and to substantiate the African greatness and what we have done and what we have contributed. And I think the problem, of course, is that we don't control our education. We send our kids to public education. We send our kids to a parochial school by some Christian Lutherans, Presbyterians, Catholics. We send our kids to charter and choice schools, and charter and choice schools are there to get money from the state. So they're still guided by the Department of Public Instruction. They're not independent. What is necessary for African people is to have independent, African-centered schools. Independent, African-centered schools. So we can instill in our children, you know, the knowledge of themselves, their history, their culture, their language, their traditions. I know one thing that Abibi Atumi offers is the ability to teach a language. You can learn Igbo, Hausa, I believe. I know you can learn Kiswahili. I think it's important. I think all of us should learn Kiswahili. That should be the language of African people on the continent and globally. Just like Mandarin Chinese. That now they're teaching Mandarin, damn it, Chinese in some schools in South Africa and other parts of Africa. Because why? They want you to communicate with the Chinese who are taking, damn it, over. To hell with Mandarin Chinese. You should be learning Kiswahili. We should have a language that we can speak and nobody outside of us can understand. To hell with English and France, French and Spanish and Mandarin Chinese. We need a language that we could communicate with independent of anybody else. It is ours. It is within our house. Who were the original Moors? The original Berbers, who were called Moors, were the North African ancestors of the present-day dark brown black people of the Sahara, mainly those called Fulani, Kunta, Tuareg, as well as the Tazar of Mauritania and Senegal and various other tribes representing and living in Chad and Morocco and Algeria. It's documented. It's well documented. And yet we don't embrace it. We don't embrace it. I know that recently there were some brothers who were confronted on the East Coast. And they had some guns and so forth. They said that they were sovereign. They were the Moors. You know, they identified themselves as Moors and sovereign citizens. They were taken into custody and facing weapons charges. But, I mean, I don't know. You know, if somebody got some information on that. You know, let me just say this. What I'm stating is historically, these things have happened. Now, when somebody can take from that and say that that's who we are, you know, I don't know. But what I'm saying is that it's not about claiming now who you were, that you were descendant of that. I mean, don't you know there's a lot of us who claim to be indigenous to this land? There are some of us who say because African people are the first place on the planet, that the planet, the whole planet belongs to us. When there's various types of people over thousands and hundreds, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years of human evolution, human development. I recognize and I believe we were the first people on the planet. I have no problem with that. And that what makes human beings different in our ability to adapt to environments that we migrated into. We migrated. But for me, there's only one place on the planet that we can make a claim to that is undeniable, unequivocal, and that we have no fear. And that is on the continent of Africa. And yes, Africa is the name of the continent. It was not named after Leo Africanus, Scipio Africanus. Supposedly it was named after him, Scipio Africanus, I believe, who was a general who defeated Hannibal. Went into Carthage and defeated Hannibal. And the Romans gave him the name Africanus. Many people have stated this. They even said that on Hidden Colors. Phil Valentine said that. I was appalled. And I thought he should know better. No. Africa did not get his name. A good couple of pieces, one I saw from your home team. I like that brother. I like that young brother. He talked about how Africa got its name. We're probably going to do a program on it to make sure that we are clear. You know, Afar, Afrique is not named after Caucasians. And one time they said that it was, they called the continent Ethiopia. And that is Greek, which means burnt face. Ethiopia. There are some names on the continent that need to be examined. Like Cameroon. Cameroon means shrimp. You know, I love Cameroon Boyo, the coffee. But to me, that name needs to be changed. I'm in favor of whatever needs to be changed because it is given to us by those outside of us, it must be changed. If there are boundaries that were drawn, and they were, by Europeans at the Berlin Conference of 1884, then those need to be changed. Capital cities, landmarks. It shouldn't be calling Lake Victoria. Damn Lake Victoria. Once again, the other thing is that, and you rescue me if I'm wrong. Rescue me if I'm wrong. There's nothing named, you know, by us outside of our, and it could be a lake, a mountain range or anything in another country, particularly a European country, that it has an African name. And if it does, how did that happen? And if it does, why do Europeans still allow it to happen? I don't know. You know? But there's nothing that I can think of or know of where Africans went outside of Africa and named something. Not even in the Olmec. Not even on our presence in this hemisphere. And it's clear when you check out the documentary, the influence that we have had in this hemisphere. It is clear. So, you know, we must come to understand the importance of our history. Not that we just glorify it. And so, I mean, because it is tremendous. I mean, we've done, but to me, the real need is for us to understand if we did it before, we can do it again. We have to get up out of this European madness that we've, this spell that we are under. This belief system that we have embraced or been made to embrace. Let's keep it real, made to embrace. Although the European makes you think that your choices are yours, that you have these choices independently, that you, that you're using your own mind. We must do this. And brothers and sisters, we must do it now. We must do it now. It is vitally important that African people, regardless of where we are on the planet, on the continent, and throughout the diaspora. In fact, let me play this piece, because this is a good piece for the importance, Sister Arcana, the importance of African diaspora, the African diaspora, the importance of it, you know? Let me see if I can find it. Let me see if I can find that piece. This is a good piece. Yeah, okay. Okay, Brother Oshi. Okay. I think I know where it is. Okay. It's not there. Let me see here. Okay. Okay. Here you go, brothers and sisters.
The U.S., when they borrow money, they're getting it at 1.5, 1.9 interest rate. Africans, when they get the same amount of money, they're paying 9, 10%. The people who don't need a break, they get a break. The ones who need a break, they don't get a break. The sheer survival of the World Bank, IMF, is based on the fact that African countries and many other developing countries do not succeed. Their success is based on our failure. That has to change. And guess who can make the change? We, the children of Africa. We, the Africans, are the ones who have to say, we know your game now. Enough is enough. We're not playing it anymore. And this is where the diaspora come in. There are more Ghanaian doctors in New York City than in the entire country of Ghana. There are more Nigerian doctors in LA than in the entire country of Nigeria. So let's be serious here. What Africa needs is capacity, capacity, capacity. And that capacity is in the diaspora. So it behooves us to bring the diaspora together. Let them understand what is really going on in our Africa. Diaspora are not going home. Diaspora angry about Africa because they are not understanding the root cause of why Africa is where it is today. They think getting rid of a president will take care of the problem. Far from it. That president is just going to be replaced by another one who's going to equally suffer from the same difficult environment to work in. So let's look at an Africa that must be free to take care of herself, an Africa that's free from exploitation from outsiders. The multinationals who are stealing from Africa every day in broad daylight. I use an example of the DRC. If you ever fly very low over the DRC, you'll see tarmacs in the jungle. You'll see 747s flying into DRC, picking up minerals and flying right out. The same multinationals are responsible for arming young people and giving them MK-16s. Because why? Their satellites in the skies are telling them where that village is. There are lots of diamonds. So what do? Arm young people, drag them up, and send them to go chop off a few heads. The rest of the village runs away so they come behind and do their illegal mining. We black people must understand what is really going on. Because what we are shown instead is, oh, look at those Africans killing each other. There are some serious games that have been played in Africa for far too long. And once we understand that, we can strategize as how we can begin to bring the difference and bring the change that Africa needs. And that change can only come if the African diaspora are united and the Wakanda villages, as I call them. It is our organized way of saying, starting with one African diaspora center of excellence, it will be a new city, a developmental hub that we can then take from there. Every sector is developed. Take healthcare. How many doctors do we need in this region to take care of this many people? We pick up education, same thing. We pick up engineering. We pick up electricity. How many megawatts of power do we have in the region? How many do we need? Be it solar, be it wind, be it hydro, be it geothermal, be it nuclear.
Ashe. What do we need? We have all that we need. The only thing we don't have is our right mind. We have all that we need. It's the only thing that we don't have. And those who are in control want to make sure that you never come in to your right mind. I have a caller. Caller, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Archie. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brother Paul. How are you? How you been, man?
Yes, sir. Well, you know, we're progressing. We're alive. We're so you can do better, and better we must do. That's it.
That's it. Better we must do. You're right. That's right.
Yeah, it took me a little bit of time to try and get on. So at first, it didn't recognize the number for some strange reason.
Ah.
Did you just play a recording?
Huh?
Did you just play a recording?
No.
Oh, that's strange, because I thought I heard,
I'm sorry, I did. I just played a recording. That's Sister Arkina, the former ambassador, one of the strongest voices.
Absolutely.
Definitely one of the strongest voices that are out there, definitely, you know, saying it and telling it like it is, especially as it relates to the fact that the Berlin Conference and neocolonialism is still happening, you know, and she's strong on it. I really admire the sister, you know, I really do. Yeah.
Oh, that's okay. Because when I actually got through, I wasn't sure if I was connected properly and recorded.
I see.
Yeah. You know, let's call it, for the sake of argument, African Americans who describe themselves as Moors.
Okay, you're right.
And I'm going to say African American because I think it comes from African from America, this idea that they're Moors. It's certainly I never heard anybody else outside of America suggest that they're Moors in that capacity.
Right. I would agree.
And the thing is, right, which I find a bit strange, when you debate with them, they say that they're not African.
Yeah.
They're here.
Yeah.
And then they and I think the description you've given, that is not even an African word, is it?
It's not. It was given to by Spain, Blackamoor, the Moor. Yeah. It's not.
Absolutely. It doesn't even sound in any way or shape or fashion anything to do with North Africa. And then another thing they describe, they talk about Morocco and suggest that America used to be called Morocco, which to me, you know, no disrespect if you're Moor, that sounds really ludicrous. But that's the kind of argument they have, that the whole world is Morocco.
It is. And in fact, the Black Hebrew Israelites, there's a number of groups. I mean, I was impressed. I didn't know it was them dressed in purple and gold. It was a lot of young men. I thought it was a fraternity. I thought it was a mega sci-fi or somebody. But they said, no, that's the Black Hebrew Israelites. And then I started seeing them on the street corners, you know, proselytizing and so forth. And once again, no, they're not African. It's just like some of us who claim not to be African and claim to be indigenous to this land, to America. In fact, there was one story that when Europeans came, they took us from here to Europe. and then brought us back and then made us slaves. You know? Yeah, Noble Drew Ali. Yeah.
So you've got another argument, which I've heard, which they say they were called blackamoors.
Right.
Yeah, blackamoors. Right. Now, from what I understand, blackamoors, the term blackamoors, is an English, derived from England. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a nickname. It's like saying, I don't know if you've ever heard an English describe a black person as colored. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of some of the ignorant English or Europeans, as you describe them, would say, you know, describe black people as colored. It's a nickname what they give. Mm-hmm. And I once watched, and it's funny, you know, because you don't find blackamoors in dictionaries today, not even the Oxford Dictionary. But I was watching a program one day, and it was quite interesting. It was, they were, in the Second World War, the woman wrote in her diary, it was a white woman, she wrote that when she saw the American GIs land in Wales, she described them in her diary as blackamoors. She said the blackamoors, blah, blah, blah. So what I'm saying is, even up to as late as 1940s, in the late this word was being used.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't find it in English dictionaries at all. I've looked. You just don't find it. For some reason, they've taken it out. But from my research, it's typically a slang name. It's a name that they give. It's not a name what these people call themselves. You know what I mean? They would have probably been so unfamiliar with that term, it would have been frightening. They wouldn't have recognized it, you know, just like today. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, even you know, when I came to America, most people said, oh, as soon as they heard my voice, they would say, are you from Europe? The funny thing is, Baba Ochi, all my life growing up, born in England, I have never heard, not even English people, describe themselves as Europeans. They don't do that. Uh-huh. You know, so that's the funny thing. Yes, in America, they would describe them as Europeans, but here in England, they do not describe themselves as Europeans. They describe themselves as English, Scottish, Welsh, Irish, but not Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
And European is a political word. It's a political term.
Mm-hmm. So the same as Caucasian. Yes. The same as Caucasian.
Absolutely.
You know, they use the mountain range, the Caucasus mountain range, to separate themselves from Western Europe, which they claim is a continent, as opposed to Eastern Europe, which is, of course, Russia and all the other Slavic countries and India and so forth, and the Western part of Europe. I mean, excuse me, in the eastern part of Europe, you know. But they don't call themselves Caucasians, you know, ordinarily.
And the craziest thing is that we will spend, some of us will spend so much time fighting and arguing for names which other people call us. That is the definition of crazy madness.
Right, I agree.
Anyway, you know, I know this short of time, so... I suggest just say keep up the good work.
All right,
keep
my brother. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Paul. All right.
I keep listening. Take care.
Peace. Yeah, they got Noble Drew Ali, of course. Brother Ralph sent that to me. I appreciate that. Of course, he was a brother born here in the States and lived here in the States. And he started the Morris Science Temple here in America, and had a following of thousands. And of course, even today, more Science Temple, you know, and you know, he wears the fez, and sometimes wears a turban, and around the same time as Marcus Garvey. And of course, one can make the claim that there's some connections and religious connections. Maybe I'll try to do a program on Noble Drew Ali and talk about him, you know, and keep it in the realm of one of the things that I always feel is problematic is the fact that, you know, we have these theologies and so forth, and they're not indigenous African. I'm only dealing with African. If you got something that has been created for us, or even something that you see outside of that, it's It's not for us. It is not for us. You know? But anyway, my time is up. I got to go. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate you listening, and hopefully you'll join us on Wednesday. And appreciate it. On Wednesday, I'll be talking with Sister Miriam and Brother Damani Aquil about the program that we have dealing with our youth on Wednesday. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure the hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bivihodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family. Hope to see you Wednesday.